A dog named Sounder, the boy began. Who's been kindly to your hurts? The boy's mother asked as she looked down at the clean white rags that bandaged the boy's fingers. Rocking on the porch, she had seen the white dot swinging back and forth in the sun when the boy wasn't much more than a moving spot far down the road.
For a while, I wasn't sure it was you, she said. Why are you walking fast? You done found him? Is your hand hurt bad? Is that a Bible somebody done mistreated?
The woman's eyes had come to rest on the book the boy held in his good hand.
No, it's a book. I found it in the trash can. Be careful what you carry off, child, his mother said. It can cause a heap of trouble. I got something to tell, the boy said as he sat down on the edge of the porch and ran his bandaged fingers over the head of the great coon dog,
who had stopped his jumping and whining and lay at the boy's feet with his head cocked to the side, looking up with his one eye. The younger children sat in a line beside the boy, waiting to hear.
Is he poorly? The woman asked slowly. Is he far? It's about something else,
the boy said after a long spell of quiet.
I ain't found him yet.
The boy told his mother and the children about his night in the teacher's cabin. The teacher wanted him to come back and go to school. He had been asked to live in the teacher's cabin and do his chores. The children's eyes widened when they heard the cabin had two lamps, two stoves, and grass growing in a yard with a fence and a gate. He told how the teacher could read and that there were lots of books on the shelves in the cabin.
Maybe he will write letters to the road camps for you, the mother said. 'Cause you'd be so busy with schooling and cleaning the school have time, the boy said. But he says like you, better not to go. Just be patient and time will pass. It's all powerful and puzzling and aggravating. But it's the Lord's will.
The boy noticed that his mother had stopped rocking. The loose boards did not rattle as the chair moved on them.
The teacher said he'd walk all the way and reason about it if you didn't want me to come to him. You don't want me to go, but I'll come home often as I can. And sometime I might bring word. It's a sign I believes in signs.
The rocker began to move back and forth, rattling the loose boards on the porch floor.
Go, child. The Lord is come to you.
When he returned to the cabin with books on the shelves and the kind man with the white hair and the gentle voice, all the boy carried was his book with one cover missing, the book that he couldn't understand. In the summers, he came home to take his father's place in the fields, for cabin rent had to be paid with field work. In the winter, he seldom came because it took more than a day's walking and sleeping on the ground.
Ain't worth it, his mother would say.
Each year, after he had been gone for a whole winter in return, the faithful Sounder would come hobbling on three legs far down the road to meet him. The great dog would wag his tail and whine. He never barked. The boy sang at his work in the fields, and his mother rocked in her chair and sang on the porch of the cabin. Sometimes when Sounder scratched fleas under the porch, she would look at the hunting lantern and the empty possum sack hanging against the wall. Six crops of persimmons and wild grapes had ripened. The possums and raccoons had gathered them unmolested. The lantern and possum sack hung untouched.
No use to nobody no more, the woman said.
The boy read to his brother and sisters when he had finished his day in the fields. He read the story of Joseph over and over and never wearied of it.
In all the books in the teacher's cabin, there's no story as good as Joseph's story, he would say to them.
The woman, listening and rocking, would say,
The Lord has come to you, child. The Lord has certainly come to you.
Late one August afternoon, The boy and his mother sat on a shaded corner of the porch. The heat and drought of the dog days had parched the earth, and the crops had been laid by. The boy had come home early because there was nothing to do in the fields.
"Dog days is a terrible time," the woman said. "It's when the heat is so bad the dogs go mad."
The boy would not tell her that the teacher had told him that dog days got their name from the dog star because it rose and set with the sun during that period. She had her own feeling for the earth, he thought, and he would not confuse it.
"Sure is hot," he said instead. "Lucky to come from the fields early."
He watched the heat waves as they made the earth look like it was moving in little ripples. Sounder came around the corner of the cabin from somewhere, hobbled back and forth as far as the road several times, and then went to his cool spot under the porch.
"That's what I say about dog days," the woman said. "Poor creature's been addled with the heat for 3 days. Can't find no place to quiet down. Been down the road nearly out of sight a second time today, and now he must have come from the fence rows. Whines all the time. A mad dog's a fearful sight, slobbering at the mouth and running every which way cause they're blind. You have to shoot him before they bite some child. It's awful hard."
"Sounder won't go mad," the boy said. "He's looking for a cooler spot, I reckon."
A lone figure came on the landscape as a speck and slowly grew into a ripply form through the heat waves.
"Scorching to be walking and toting far today," she said as she pointed to the figure on the road.
A catbird fussed on the wilted lilac at the corner of the cabin.
"Why's that bird fussing when no cat's prowling? Old folks has a saying that if a catbird fusses about nothing, something bad is coming. It's a bad sign."
"Sounder, I reckon," the boy said. "He just passed a bush when he came around the cabin."
In the tall locust at the edge of the fence, its top leaves yellowed from the lack of water, a mockingbird mimicked the catbird with half a dozen notes, decided it was too hot to sing, and disappeared. The great coon dog, whose rhythmic panting came through the porch floor, came from under the house and began to whine. As the figure on the road drew near, it took shape and grew indistinct again in the wavering heat. Sometimes it seemed to be a person dragging something, for little puffs of red dust rose in sulfurous clouds at every other step. Once or twice they thought it might be a brown cow or mule, dragging its hooves in the sand and raising and lowering its weary head. Sounder panted faster, wagged his tail, whined, moved from the dooryard to the porch and back to the dooryard. The figure came closer. Now it appeared to be a child carrying something on its back and limping.
"The children still at the creek?" she asked.
"Yes, but it's about dry."
Suddenly, the voice of the great coonhound broke the sultry August deadness. The dog dashed along the road, leaving three pointed clouds of red dust to settle back to earth behind him. The mighty voice rolled out upon the valley, each flute-like bark echoing from slope to slope.
"Lord's mercy! Dog days done made him mad!"
And the rocker was still. Sounder was a young dog again. His voice was the same mellow sound that had ridden the November breeze from the lowlands to the hills. The boy and his mother looked at each other. The catbird stopped her fussing in the wilted lilac bush. On three legs, the dog moved with the same lightning speed that had carried him to the throat of a grounded raccoon. Sounder's master had come home. Taking what might have been measured as a halting half-step and then pulling a stiff, dead leg forward, dragging a foot turned sideways in the dust, the man limped into the yard. Sounder seemed to understand that to jump up and put his paw against his master's breast would topple him into the dust. So the great dog smelled and whined and wagged his tail and licked the limp hand dangling at his master's side. He hopped wildly around his master in a circle that almost brought head and tail together. The head of the man was pulled to the side where a limp arm dangled and where the foot pointed outward as it was dragged through the dust. What had been a shoulder was now pushed up and back to make a one-sided hump so high that the leaning head seemed to rest upon it. The mouth was askew, too, and the voice came out of the part farthest away from the withered, wrinkled, lifeless side. The woman in the steel rocker said,
"Lord, Lord,"
and sat suffocated in shock.
"Sounder knew it was you just like you was coming home from work," the boy said in a clear voice.
Half the voice of the man was gone, too. So in slow, measured stuttering, he told how he had been caught in a dynamite blast in the prison quarry, how the dead side had been crushed under an avalanche of limestone, and how he had been missed for a whole night in the search for dead and wounded. He told how the pain of the crushing stone had stopped in the night, how doctors had pushed and pulled and encased the numb side of his body in a cast, how they had spoken kindly to him and told him he would die. But he resolved he would not die, even with a half-dead body, because he wanted to come home again.
"For being hurt, they let me have time off my sentence," the man said. "And since I couldn't work, I guess they was glad to."
"The Lord had brought you home," the woman said.
The boy heard faint laughter somewhere behind the cabin. The children were coming home from the creek. He went around the cabin slowly, then hurried to meet them.
"Pa's home," he said, and grabbed his sister, who had started to run toward the cabin. "Wait! He's mighty crippled up, so behave like nothing has happened."
"Can he walk?"
the youngest child asked.
"Yes, and don't you ask no questions."
"You've been mighty natural and considerate," the mother said to the younger children later when she went to the woodpile and called them to pick dry kindling for a quick fire.
When she came back to the porch, she said,
"We was gonna just have a cold piece, 'cause it's so sultry, but now I think I'll cook."
Everything don't change much, the boy thought. It's eating, sleeping, and talking, and setting that goes on. One day might be different from another, but there ain't much difference when they're put together. Sometimes there were long, quiet spells. Once or twice the boy's mother said to the boy,
"He's powerful proud of your learning. Read something from the scriptures."
But mostly, they just talked about heat and cold, and wind, and clouds, and what's going to be done, and time passing. As the days of August passed and September brought signs of autumn, the crippled man sat on the porch step and leaned the paralyzed, deformed side of his body against a porch post. This was the only comfortable sitting position he could find. The old coon dog would lie facing his master, with his one eye fixed and his one ear raised. Sometimes he would tap his tail against the earth. Sometimes the ear would droop and the eye would close. Then the great muscles would flex in dreams of the hunt, and the mighty chest would give off the muffled whisper of a bark. Sometimes the two limped together to the edge of the fields or wandered off into the pine woods. They never went along the road. Perhaps they knew how strange a picture they made when they walked together. About the middle of September, the boy left to go back to his teacher.
"It's the most important thing,"
his mother said. And the crippled man said,
"We're fine. We won't need nothing."
"I'll come for a few days before it's cold to help gather wood and walnuts."
The broken body of the old man withered more and more. But when the smell of the harvest and the hunt came with October, his spirit seemed to quicken his dragging step. One day, he cleaned the dusty lantern globe, and the old dog, remembering, bounced on his three legs and wagged his tail as if to say, "I'm ready." The boy had come home. To gather the felled trees and chop the standing dead ones was part of the field pay, too. He had been cutting and dragging timber all day. Sometimes he had looked longingly at the lantern and possum sack, but something inside him had said, wait. Wait and go together. But the boy did not want to go hunting anymore. And without his saying anything, his father had said,
you're too tired, child. We ain't going far, no way.
In the early darkness, the halting, hesitant swing of the lantern marked the slow path from fields to pine woods toward the lowlands. The boy stood on the porch, watching until the light was lost behind pine branches. Then he went and sat by the stove. His mother rocked as the mound of kernels grew in the fold of her apron.
He been mighty pert, she said. I hope he don't fall in the dark. Maybe he'll be happy now he can go hunting again.
And she took up her singing where she had left off.
You know nobody else gonna walk it for you. You gotta walk it by yourself.
Sounders scratching at the door awakened the boy. It was still night, but the first red glow of dawn was rising in a faint crescent over the pine woods.
Sounder just couldn't poke slow enough for you, father,
the mother said to the boy as they stood in the doorway, straining and sifting the darkness for some movement.
Lantern wouldn't burn out in this time, the boy said. No sign of light. He must have fallen or got tired. Sounder will show me.
Sounder was already across the road into the stalk land, whining, moving his head from one side to the other, looking back to be sure that the boy was following. Across the stalk land, into the pine woods, into the climbing, brightening glow of the dawn, the boy followed the dog, whose anxious pace slowed from age as they went.
By a dog's age, Sounder is past dying time, the boy said half aloud.
Fear had always prompted him to talk to himself. Deep in the pine woods, along a deserted logging road, the boy and dog came to a small open space where there had once been a log ramp. The sun was just beginning to drive its first splinters of light through the pines, bouncing against tree trunks and earth. At the foot of one of the trees, the boy's father sat, the lantern still burning by his side.
So tuck it out, he fell asleep, the boy said to himself.
But the figure did not move when Sounder licked his hand. The boy put his hand on his father's good shoulder and shook ever so gently. The chin did not lift itself. No eyes turned up to meet the boy.
Tired. So tired.
When the boy returned to the cabin and told his mother, her lips grew long and thin and pale. But when she finally spoke, they were warm and soft as when she sang.
When life is so tiresome, there ain't no peace like the greatest peace, the peace of the Lord's hand holding you. And he'll have a store-bought box for burial, 'cause all these years I paid close attention to his burial insurance.
They buried the boy's father in the unfenced lot behind the meeting house. The preacher stood amid the sumac and the running briars before the mound of fresh red earth and read,
the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. There's plenty of wood, and I must go back to school,
the boy told his mother several days after they had buried his father.
Sandy ain't got no spirit left for living. He hasn't gone with me to the worst of chops since Pa died. He doesn't even whine anymore. He just lies on his coffee sacks under the cabin steps. I've dug a grave for him under the big jack oak tree in the stalk land by the fence row. It'll be ready if the ground freezes. You can carry him on his coffee sacks and bury him.
He'll be gone before I come home again.
The boy was right. 2 weeks before he came home for Christmas, Sounder crawled under the cabin and died. The boy's mother told him all there was to tell.
He just crawled up under the house and died, she said.
The boy was glad. He had learned to read his book with a torn cover better now. He had read in it, "Only the unwise think that what is changed is dead." He had asked the teacher what it meant, and the teacher had said that if a flower blooms once, it goes on blooming somewhere forever. It blooms on for whoever has seen it blooming. It was not quite clear to the boy then, but it was now. Years later, walking the earth as a man, if it all sweep back over him again and again, like an echo on the wind. The pine trees would look down forever on a lantern burning out of oil, but not going out. A harvest moon would cast shadows forever of a man walking upright, his dog bouncing after him. And the quiet of the night would fill and echo again with the deep voice of Sounder, the great coon dog.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.